May it please the court, Andrew Kasmer on behalf of Mr. Abrams. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
Your Honors, the appellant, Mr. Abrams, requests that this court reverse the finding of the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission in that the commission erred in terminating his open award of wage loss benefits. Originally, Mr. Abrams sustained an injury to his neck, his back, and his left knee in July of 2010. As recently as May 9, 2011, an award for wage loss benefits was entered in his favor.
But doesn't this boil down to a battle between the medical experts, and so the comp commission can go either way, and we really don't have much power to change that?
It would have, Your Honor, and I wouldn't have noted this appeal if that were simply the case, but in this instance, because there was a prior award entered, the burden was on the employer, the insurance company, to proffer certain evidence to overturn or to end the award of wage loss benefits. In this case, the burden was on the employer to provide medical evidence that showed that a doctor who was aware of the claimant's job duties believed that that claimant was fully capable of a return to full duty work. In so doing, as this court's prior opinions have indicated, that doctor and the employer had to proffer certain evidence to show A, that the doctor was aware of the pre-injury job duties, and that B, based upon his examination of the claimant, the medical records, and those job duties, that the claimant was released to full duty work. In this case, the independent medical examiner hired by the insurance company did not do that. He simply concluded that the claimant was capable of a return to full duty without showing anywhere in his report or his exam that he was aware of the claimant's job duties. In fact, in his report, he misstates that the claimant was a bus driver, or he simply stated that the claimant was driving a bus at the time of the accident. Nowhere in his 2012 report does he state what the claimant's job duties were. There was an earlier report that he had authored that he indicated that the claimant was a cleaner of buses, but even in that report, he did not set forth what the job duties were. And I would say that both of the commissioners, it was a split decision at the full commission level, but in the majority decision, they don't even address this issue. So not only isn't it just a battle of the doctors, but in the full commission's opinion, they don't even touch on this aspect of the case. And so it's clearly a matter of law as to whether or not this court believes, in accordance with its prior opinions, that the in order to terminate the award, the doctor had to show that the claimant was fully able to perform his duties, as stated in the Johnson case and in the Morris case, that the court concluded that the employer has to show that he is able to perform normal job duties, not necessarily equivalent to a simply return to work. But the doctor has to say, I'm aware of what the job duties were, here's what they were, and I believe he can do that. Now, had the doctor said that, had the employer proffered that evidence, then yes, it would be a simple battle of the doctors, in which case we probably wouldn't be here today. But I challenge the employer to show where in the record the claimant's job duties are clearly specified.
But isn't essentially this case one that is assessed from the standpoint of the factual determinations made by the fact finder in this case? And then the fact finder in this case essentially credited your opponent's doctor over your doctor and suggested, through the way I read the record, that the evidence supporting your client's case, at least through the doctor, not through your presentation of the evidence, but through the doctors, was deficient.
I believe that the doctor, the interpretation was that the medical evidence of the claimant's doctors, is that what you're asking, Your Honor?
Yes.
Was insufficient. But that's not the issue, because the claimant didn't have the burden of proof here. The burden of proof is on the employer to terminate the open award.
Well, who was Igolevsky? Was that the employee, the IME doctor?
Yes, sir.
And at the Joint Appendix 148, the notes from that doctor indicate analysis for a shifter / cleaner for Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. This was reviewed. Various tasks include driving and cleaning bus, responsible for cleaning bus, responsible for fueling bus, checking other fluids in the bus. I mean, doesn't that suggest that the IME doctor had the necessary familiarity with what the job description was?
Even in the way Your Honor poses the question, I think it calls for speculation. We're not sure. You said, doesn't that? Well, no, it doesn't say what his job duties were. And if you go to the testimony, the claimant stated what his job duties were, which are different than what the job duties understood by Dr. Glavsky was. Dr. Gillespie doesn't mention the lifting requirement, doesn't mention any of the standing requirements, doesn't mention all the specificity of the job. Your Honor, this is basic tenets of the law here. The burden of proof was on the employer to basically, all they had to do was put forth a job description, put that into evidence, and or say, Dr. Gillespie, have you looked at this job analysis? Yes, I have. Here is the job duties. I've looked at it. I've reviewed it. But that's not what was done here.
But this outline from the Joint Appendix 148, you're saying, is deficient. It's insufficient because it does not give the lifting requirements or the amount of time for standing.
I could go on, Your Honor. If you look at the record where the claimant testified, he lists on page 39 of the appendix and page 40, he lists a myriad of job duties that aren't listed here. And in order for Dr. Gillespie to effectively opine that he could go back to his particular job, he needs to be aware of each of the job duties. It's not sufficient for him to just simply say, well, he was a cleaner shifter and I know he did some of these things. He needs to say, I'm aware of all the job duties that this man is required to do and that he's able to go back to them.
Didn't your client explain his pre-entry work obligations to the doctor?
It doesn't indicate that what was exactly explained to the doctor, Your Honor.
In the appendix at page 147.
That's the earlier examination. The examination upon which this application was based is the one that begins on page 142, but even on page 147 in the September 14th, 2011 independent medical evaluation, it simply again states that he works as a bus shifter, which indicates he's basically cleaning buses, but that he has to move them around and he does some mechanical work.
And also at appendix at page 148, said the various tasks include driving and cleaning the bus, responsibility for fueling the bus, and checking the fuel and other fluids for the bus. That's appendix at page 148.
Correct. And appendix one at page 39, Your Honor, the claimant testified at hearing that his job required prolonged standing, walking, jumping off and on buses, bending, twisting, sweeping, lifting up to 100 pounds. He continues on appendix page 40 that he has to clean 40 to 50 buses per night. That's not the same job description that the doctor elicits. At least I don't think so. And so it absent something that from the employer that shows this is the man's job, you can't make a finding here that he's able to do those things. Dr. Gillespie doesn't say he can do all those things. And that's the standard. It's just a minimum standard, no different than if you were in a personal injury case trying to show negligence. You have to show duty, a breach of duty, proximate cause, and damages. In this case, the employer failed to put on evidence, just simply setting forth this for the record is his job duties.
Are there any cases that you can cite that stand for the proposition that it is the responsibility of the physician for the employer to state with the degree of specificity that you have suggested the nature of the claimant's injuries?
Yes, Your Honor. The Celanese Fibers versus Johnson case, which is cited in my brief, a 1985 opinion, indicates that the threshold test of compensability is whether the employee is able to fully perform the duties of his pre-injury employment. That requires the employer to show that he is able to do each and every aspect of his job, which if you look at the Morris case, Your Honor.
But that was my question. My question was, can you show any cases that require the degree of specificity that you're suggesting that Dr. Igalewski should have had in his report?
Well, that may be a case of first impression for this court to specify what degree of specificity is required, but in the Morris versus Badger Cohatton case, the court did address a very similar issue where in that case, the hospital doctor had indicated that the claimant could return back to work. And in that case, this court overturned the commission and found that that was not sufficient because they said that being able to do normal duties is not necessarily equivalent to a return to pre-injury condition. So that's the closest this court has come into making a determination that the doctor must lay it out with more specificity than simply say, I think he can return to work.
The standard, and you've correctly cited, is that credible evidence must support the commission's finding that the claimant is able to return to his pre-injury work. Whenever I hear the term credible evidence, that sort of takes me immediately to a discussion or discernment as to whether or not there is anything in the record to support the commission's findings. And in this case, I may disagree with it myself. If I were a commissioner, the commission did find that there was a factual predicate to support the premise. How do we get around that?
Well, because the legal predicate is that the burden of proof is on the employer to show exactly what his job was. And without that showing, the doctor can't make a determination as to whether or not he could return to pre-injury job duties. In other words, it's not sufficient for the doctor to just generally state, I think this is what he does. It's their burden to prove this is what he does, not to speculate as to what he does. So the credible evidence may be that the doctor was aware of some of his job duties, but in this, on this particular record, there's no way that this court can find that there's evidence anywhere in this record that except for the claimant's testimony at trial that sets forth what his job duties actually were, which means that at no point prior to trial has the employer provided any evidence showing what his job was.
So implicit in your analysis is that there is a shifting of the burden.
That's my whole case, Your Honor, is the burden of proof is on the employer, and the first thing they had to prove was, here's what his job is. And so it's not a matter of doctors, it's a matter of they didn't show what his job was. So based upon that, their application must fail as a matter of law. You have to show what the guy does before you can then turn to the doctor and say, can he do this?
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time. You can continue if you choose, or you can reserve the rest.
I'll wait. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mark Doe, Associate General Counsel for Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. May it please the court. We're asking the court to affirm the full commission opinion, which affirmed the deputy commissioner finding that the claimant was able to return back to work as of the termination of the award, November 9, 2012. As a court has
Mr. Kasner, Mr. Kasner has suggested and made a rather compelling argument that in this case there is just simply not enough evidence for your client to carry the burden of proof in this case. Suggest that number one, the doctor, your doctor, had the underlying facts and circumstances to justify his determination that the claimant was able to return to work, and so therefore, since there's the evidence is insufficient to accomplish that objective, the commission's decision must be wrong.
Mr. Kasner's act is questioning the quality of the evidence, which is left to the trial discretion of the trier of fact. I believe there is credible evidence, and the credible evidence, as Your Honors have independently pointed out, there's actually three points where Dr. Ebeleski points out his awareness of the claimant's job description. As Your Honors pointed out in Appendix 147, Dr. Ebeleski's September 2011 report, he, if I may quote, he states that he works as a bus shifter, in which he indicates is basically cleaning buses, but he has to move them around, and he does some mechanical work. He indicates that this is a backdoor interest in being a mechanic. This is claimant's own statement to the doctor describing his job functions. And in that same report, in Appendix 148, Dr. Ebeleski says, in the review of the medical records that he reviewed, an analysis for a shifter cleaner for the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. This was reviewed. The various tasks include driving and cleaning the bus, responsible fueling bus, and checking the fuel and other fluids for the bus. A third point in which Dr. Ebeleski refers to his knowledge of the job duties is his September 26, 2012 report. In the review of the charts, he indicates, quote, the documents present for review include his job description and the reports that I performed on September 14, 2011. This is credible evidence. This is evidence that the employer has established to meet the burden that the physician, the examining physician, is aware of the claimant's job duties. Now, Mr. Kasmer, the claimant would argue that this is insufficient evidence because claimant has some testimony in the hearing record where he says he cleans 40 to 50 buses, and that isn't per se exactly recited by Dr. Ebeleski. But what's also clear is in that hearing transcript, that evidence is never asked whether or not the claimant omitted that to Dr. Ebeleski. Dr. Ebeleski's knowledge of either what the claimant told him in his narrative of the analysis for the shifter cleaner position or the job description was never directly challenged.
If the issue before the commission was whether or not the claimant was physically capable of conducting the job, why wouldn't it be important to meet for the employer to meet their burden that they point out what the physical requirements were of the job, the amount of time standing, the amount of the movements and the weightlifting, etc., that has been suggested here today by the
We would argue that it has been met. The doctor's met it in two different ways. One, again, he states that he's aware of the nature of the job. He's also aware of the job description. And two, he's aware of the physical disability that's resulting from the injury. He's aware of the neck, the back components of the injury. He's aware of the treatment, and Dr. Ebeleski doesn't just say that he can go back to work, he also believes that he's recovered fully. That's a different statement than saying returning back to work, we want to be more precise, but he also backs that up saying, I've reviewed the job description. I've examined the patient, I've reviewed his the diagnostic reports, which the full commission relies on as well, to show that there's credible evidence, and reviewing the MRI, which is largely normal, reviewing the treatment records, and also casting doubt on the treating physician at the time, which is Dr. Schimpf. Dr. Schimpf was the treating physician at the time, also stated during the contemporaneous period where we were alleging that he could return back to work, that he was uncertain of the continuing etiology of claimant's complaints.
The concern that I've heard expressed by the claimant's bar in situations like this is that the employer will bring in its hired doctor, and basically the hired doctor who has an allegiance to the employer will essentially justify the employer's position that the claimant is able to return to work, and would further suggest the check and balance that needs to be in place in these kinds of circumstances is that this claimant's, that the employer's doctor must indeed have an independent basis for making its determination with some degree of specificity as to why the claimant should indeed be able to, should be required to return to work. And rather than just saying, oh, I've examined him, he should go back to work because I feel that that is indeed the case. How would you respond to that concern expressed by the claimant?
Well, I think it happens all the time that employers will hire an independent examiner. And I think the case law and the act counters that by allowing the claimant's physician to be given great weight. The treating physician's opinion is given great weight. In this case, it wasn't just a balancing between two examining physicians. The standard's a little bit higher than that, and the commission met that because the commission knows that they can only reject the treating physician's opinion if, one, there's some doubt in the treating physician's opinion. If it was just an IME opinion, if it was just a battle of the experts, based on the case law, the treating physician gets great weight, and they would literally
claim it wins
all the time.
Yeah.
And but in this case, factually, we have the treating physician at the time, Dr. Schimpf, who gives uncertain diagnosis of the continuing complaints and the etiology of the complaints. So there's a doubt. There's a cast of doubt. And then you have the examining physician who gives with very good specificity, with two physical examinations, has it reviewed not just the examination, physical examination, but reviewed the diagnostic, the objective medical records, and then goes further and says, I've reviewed the job description, an analysis, and a claimant's narrative. What this case really boils down to is this court, as claimant would essentially argue, would be instance of first impression, require that the trial court demand of the IME physician an exact litany of description of check, almost a check fashion of how much, I guess with a job description, what a claimant is able to do, and check off in a fashion. I believe the case law says that on all the cases where the examining physician or the treating physician is required to have knowledge of the job description is because there was no, in those kinds of cases, there was no evidence that the claimant had the doctor was aware of the position in detail. In this case, it's different because
So would it be your position, based upon the analytical framework that you're providing, that if the commission at the fact-finding level had determined that the claimant's doctors were credible and that the record was deficient as far as information provided by the IME to support its conclusion in the case, that you would lose on appeal?
That happens all the time, and I would say that that's not how it happened in this instance. If the claimant's physician was certain in their diagnosis, certain in the causal relationship, and said the claimant can't return back to work, it would be very hard. It would be the great weight standard is very hard to overcome, but that is not what happened in this case. In this case, we have the commission looking at the medical records as a whole for the employer's burden and sees that the treating physician is uncertain at this point whether or not, based upon the nature of the injury, the examination that the treating physician has been overseeing, that whether or not there's any continuing causal relationship. And we have to remember that the case law and the standard is that once a injury is found compensable, there's still a burden to continue the causal relationship to prove that disability is related. Dr. Schimpf says, at this point, I'm uncertain why, based upon the examination, the diagnostics, why there is a continuing complaint. Dr. Evaleski has reviewed both again the physical exam, two physical examinations as well as the medical reports, the normal MRI, and says based upon my review of the job description, what I've been told that he does at work, he's able to return back to work full duty. Now, this is all credible evidence. This is evidence that the employer has put forth, and what has not happened in this case, and what the court would need to see to overturn the full commission, is a challenge by Mr. Abrams to say what Dr. Evaleski looked at, the job description, was deficient. That's not in evidence. What Dr. Evaleski was told directly by the claimant in that narrative in Appendix 147, that he would have to challenge that was insufficient. But in the hearing transcript, what the claimant puts forth as his job, some of his job duties, nowhere in evidence is a statement, a fact by the claimant that this is stuff that I've never told Dr. Evaleski. These are requirements that Dr. Evaleski never asked me about. That's not in evidence. The employer has met the burden by establishing credible evidence. Now, whether the claimant has put up evidence enough to sufficiently rebut, it hasn't happened. Otherwise, we're just left with just merely weighing the evidence. And weighing the evidence, again, in the case of conflicting medical evidence, should be left to the trier of fact's discretion.
Okay, thank you, counsel. I think we understand your argument. Sir, you have about 4 minutes and 22 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. The employer argues that Dr. Evaleski was basically aware and that he was aware of the nature of his job. The point that claimant brings to the bar today, Your Honors, is that it's the employer's burden of proving that the doctor knew of each and every one of his job functions. Even if he didn't know of one of the job functions, if he didn't address that, then it's impossible for him to show that he can return to his full, complete pre-injury employment. To that end, the employer also argues that the claimant is somehow switching the burdens here. There's no question as to who has the burden. The burden's on the employer. So it's not up to the claimant to get on the stand and rebut that the doctor did or didn't know his job duties. That's irrelevant. The employer has the sole burden to prove that the doctor, whose opinion they're relying upon, knew what the job duties were. If they don't prove that, the claimant doesn't have to rebut that. If the doctor gets on the stand and says, yes, I'm aware of each and every one of his essential job functions, then the employer's met their burden. But in this case, he doesn't do that. In this case, in fact, the employer's own doctor says different things in different places in his report. His 2011 report mentions some job duties. His 2012 report refers to him as a bus driver. They're relying upon his 2012 report in support of their application that he could return to full-duty work, but that report is based on the misappropriation that he's a bus driver. That's not the case. There's also case law from this court that says when a doctor's opinion is based upon insufficient or incorrect information, then it's to be given no weight whatsoever. That's the Sneed case. And so I would say that in two respects, Dr. Glepsy's report fails in that light. One, he refers to him as a bus driver. Two, nowhere in that second report does he ever describe any of his job duties, nor does he even mention that he was a cleaner shifter. He only refers to him as a bus driver. Also in that report, he admits in his report that he hasn't seen any medical records after 2012, which renders his opinion equally insufficient under case law, not a factual setting, but as a matter of law. Finally, Dr. Glepsy, if you look at his conclusions, indicates that my client was capable of a return to full duty work in 2010. Now, in his first report, he says he can return to work in October of 2010. In his 2012 report, he says he can return to work in November of 2010. Well, under the Shy case, Your Honors, which he just decided last year, Your Honors found that if an issue could have been tried before in an earlier proceeding and wasn't, then that issue is essentially waived under res judicata. Well, in this case, both of Dr. Glepsy's reports say that the claimant was capable of full-duty work in 2010.
As I recall that case, that was a specific review of a particular code provision that allowed the commission to take a look at things that were clear from the record and should have been considered in the context of one case because of judicial economy. That's what that case stands for.
Right, but the same rationale applies here because there was an opinion issued by a deputy commissioner which was not appealed in May of 2011. Okay, at issue in that case was the claimant's disability. The commission found that the claimant was totally disabled, unable to return to his job. Now you have Dr. Glepsy almost 2 years later saying this claimant was capable of returning to work in 2010, which predates that opinion. Well, under the Shy case, if the employer is relying upon that opinion to support a return to work 2 years later, that's barred by res judicata or collateral estoppel, because if their only opinion they're relying upon is that he could return to work in 2010, that issue should have been tried in 2011, not in 2013. So again, I think that's a sub-issue that the court has to look at. If they do find that the employer met its burden of proof on the first issue, I think you still have to look at the overall opinion and decide whether or not...
If there was such a thing as surrebuttal, I think what your opponent colleague would say, it doesn't matter when we effectuate our rights as long as we get the relief we're entitled to when we do effectuate our rights.
Well, but that issue, my point is that issue should have been raised at the earlier proceeding, not at the later proceeding, because that's an issue that if they're in fact relying upon an opinion that says he could have returned to work in 2010... then shouldn't that have been brought up at the 2011 hearing, not in a 2013 hearing? The same issues were for the court. The issue was whether or not this man's disabled. So if you're going to rely upon an opinion in 2013, that was the same opinion you're relying upon in 2011, but it was overruled then, how can you rely upon it now to support a subsequent application on the same exact issue?
Okay. I think we understand your argument. The matter is submitted. We'll come down and greet counsel.